Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast. Today, my guest is Paul Masvidal from Cynic and Aeon Spoke, and I love this dude. I've known him for a really, really long time. My band toured with Cynic back in the day, and of course, I worship Cynic for a really, really long time. I would say they're one of the founders of tech metal. It's interesting because back in the day when they came out in the early 90s, they were so far ahead of their time that the audience just didn't get it. But when they came back 15 years later, everybody got it, which is really, really great. It inspired me to understand that sometimes sticking to your guns and not worrying about commercial success is the way to go. And if you're ahead of your time, maybe you should just try again later. Paul is he's a great guitar player, a great musician, a great guy. Here goes. Paul Masvidal, welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Nice to see you again or speak with you again, Al.
I feel like the last time must have been 2009 or 10, either on that Dragon Force tour.
Right.
Or at some point when you played in Atlanta. Either way, it was a long ass time ago.
It's been a long time. Yeah. Decade.
Isn't that nuts?
I know. Time. The passage of time. It's really interesting.
It's sometimes hard to get a grip on because, I mean, I feel like it's super cliche to say, but when everything is happening, you don't even notice the actual length of time that's elapsed. And it seems like it goes fast, but if you actually go and think about everything that went down, it didn't go by so fast.
Yeah, it's really, it breaks down to a series of moments, right? Your presence with each moment. And I just had a conversation with a friend about this yesterday, how I feel this tremendous sense of my life could end at any moment kind of awareness. Mm-hmm. So, but then I realized I got really intimate with it in 2010, which is interesting, or 2011, but around that period, even before then, but I was, that's when we made Carbon-Based Anatomy, and I was doing a lot of ayahuasca, and I was having these incredible experiences that take you right where you feel like you're just touching death.
In a good way or a bad way, or just a way?
In a good way, because you're just, you get so intimate with having to let go of everything that you know, that you use to navigate life as you know it. And then this past year, you know, just like another level for me of just, you know, when you lose two lifelong friends and mates that you forge your identity with, you know, Reinert especially, it's a really disorienting environment. You know, Sean and Malone and I, we talk about it all the time. Malone would almost be offended if someone said, music is fun.
It is not fun almost ever.
I mean, it's the hardest thing ever for those of us trying to do the work as a working musician. But I'm saying, like, he was offended in the sense that the hobbyist that just treated as this like distraction tool, like it's just something you do on the side, or, and it's like, no, this is your whole life, and you give everything to this, and you commit, and you, I mean, it's, so there's the extreme versions of this, and he's an example that kind of pushed it to the edges of just dedication. I mean, honorable beyond levels, insane. And, but yeah, no, I do think it's, you know, those of us that are like, we're driven by something. It's not about me. It's, you're more about trying to create a clear vessel for information to pass through.
I feel like the people who I've known throughout my life, both in, you know, the world of guitar and metal, but then also in my dad's world of classical music, just people that have dedicated their life to it, they don't tend to ever say they had a choice in the matter. They just did it because that was what they were designed to do. It wasn't really a hobby or an entertainment thing, or even though they could get some entertainment out of it or provide some entertainment to other people, they never felt like pursuing it was an option.
I could totally relate to that. Yeah. I actually remember feeling sorry for people like in high school that were like, I'm not sure what I want to do. I'm not knowing what I'm going to study, thinking about this for college. And I thought, fuck, that must be hard to not know.
It's weird, right?
Yeah. You know what I mean? And that those of us who like end up in music, it's like, it was so obvious. You know, it was like there was no other thing. It was, this was the thing. But yeah, I'm always curious, because I do believe everybody has some great mission, you know, and or some path that has some purpose for them. They do serve some purpose. We're not just all futile. It's just a matter of kind of getting in touch with it. And even an accountant can be creative. Even, I mean, actually accountants are very creative, and so are lawyers, but it's a different kind of, it's expressed in the right now.
It's a different kind of creativity, but I can tell you from, you know, we were texting the other night and I told you that I took a really long break from playing and making music, like years long, to start the companies. I honestly never thought I'd come back to it. But the thing that I realized while I was doing that was two things. One, the creative urge or expressing the creativity wasn't all that different. I mean, it translated differently.
Yeah.
And maybe accessed a slightly different part of my brain. But at the end of the day, it was still the same thing. As you get an idea, you're passionate about the idea. You don't know where the idea even came from in the first place. And you have this urge to just see it all the way through. And there's not much of a choice in the matter. And so I totally agree with you, actually, that the creativity doesn't just get expressed through art.
Yeah.
It gets expressed through people.
Because, right, it's true. Yeah. And art, but art as a form, as a vibrational form, as a form of creation, I think music is high up there, man. And it's not that there's levels or something, but music is fucking, it's pretty amazing. You know, the reality of what that does and what you're doing and the act of forging sound and creating these environments that are purely auditory, which is just fascinating. You can't see it. You can't touch it. You can just use your ears to hear it. I mean, you can see it if you notate it, but even that's just still watered down. Yeah, it's not it. So yeah, it's, yes, it is an incredible, incredible art form. And I was being facetious when I said, you know, lawyers and accountants, I mean, they're creative in ways that are not necessarily, you know, they, especially in the entertainment industry, they have to be creative.
Yeah. Well, I think that the how and the what are two different things. I feel like any time that someone figures out a solution for something that didn't exist prior, they're being creative, they're creating something. But I completely do agree that there's something deeper about music. I've always thought that the proof in that, I don't know exactly what it is that's deeper about it, but I feel like the proof is that it transcends language, spoken language. You can get people from all different cultures, nationalities, all feeling the exact same thing with the same piece of music, where they don't even understand the words, if there are words. The words almost don't even matter, but the feeling that it creates is universal. And so it's got to be deeper than even language, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is so deep.
Which is strange too, because like the idea of it being a hobby or being entertaining, it's not invalid necessarily if it brings people joy.
All forms have a right to exist, and we have no right to be snobs just because we're giving everything we have to destroy our lives in the name of this art form. But it's just, you see through, you know. I remember actually having, I would see how that all the time with guitar students, or they'd pick up the guitar and I could immediately see if they were inclined or not. You know, like you, if you had an inclination towards music, and there's a lot you can teach, but there's a lot that you can't teach. And I would observe that. I was like, I'm not sure if this is the right path for you. This, you might, it might be something else. I'm sure it's creative, but it might not be guitar, you know, like it might be another instrument.
Which is fine.
It's just totally fine. It's just trying to like figure out which one it is, or what tool you're using or medium to kind of get this thing out, to say whatever it is that's coming through.
You know, what you said earlier about it never being a question for you, I've thought about that too, because I do remember that from high school. Man, even in adulthood, I've encountered it where I know people that are just kind of existing. Sometimes I'm jealous of them, actually, because it seems like they're less tortured. But I remember in high school, people were weighing out what they wanted to do. And I was just thinking, how is this even, how do you not know? Like, and I don't mean, how did you not sit there and figure it out? Like, I never sat there and figured it out. It was just there. I feel like it's been the same for you.
Oh, absolutely. No, I think it's one of those things where some people, you know, the art of their lives is an intimate relationship. It's a partnership in that, and raising a family. And that becomes the thing that they do that expresses something beyond them. You know, I mean, there's so many ways it can manifest in a non-literal way. And musicians are just a unique breed of creature. I mean, the fact that we chose even music instead of, for example, painting or writing or something, you know, although I'm curious about other art forms and have dabbled, it's like just the act of music. It's like, and I found I'm really, that's why I like to be around musicians as much as possible too, because the way you meet each other and connect is so unique. People have really given their life to music versus like others. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just have a different level of, we meet somewhere else, you know, it's, I don't know. You just walk the same road. You've been through similar stuff. It's kind of cool.
It's a common understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you've given your life to it and never been driven by anything other than the need to create, right? It was not ruled by any other agenda.
What I think is interesting about you is, you know, we're talking about that need to create. I've always admired how, you know, even though it's music, you've never kept it limited to one genre, one medium, really one anything. It's you've always done several things. And I know that, like, it's all your output, but what I'm wondering about that is, was that a conscious decision, like going into soundtracking or as opposed to doing the band thing for a while? It was a conscious thing, like, I'm reading the writing on the wall, I think I should point my life in a different direction? Or is it more of an artistic pull, like, I'm not feeling doing the band thing right now?
I think it's a little bit of both, you know. Like, we were always super eclectic music fans even since the early days. I think maybe I had a short period where I only listened to death metal, you know, like I had one moment where it was just like death metal. Yeah. And then, but you know, it was just like, that was it. But then I definitely, because before I had a moment before that was very eclectic. And then plenty, you know, obviously everything post, and that window was probably really tight. I just got swallowed by the sound and was so engrossed in it. But it was always like an eclectic thing. I mean, even the early days of Cynic, we were completely listening to everything but metal. I mean, this is the joke. When we made Death's Human, we were like totally just everything but metal. And here we're making this like brutal, you know, intense death metal album. But I think that's what made it so interesting, is that our reference points were so outside, and yet we totally knew that music and we loved it. It was just, we were inspired by other sounds. So coming to, you know, when we moved to LA, I moved here first, like Cynic had broken up. I moved here because I got a free ride to a school, you know, with jazz musicians playing guitar. And I thought, okay, this city's inviting me in. I'm going to just jam all day. This sounds fun. But then the reality of survival came back into play. So I was like bartending at night and in school, and then I thought, and I started to work for this composer. And I had a neighbor who worked for who was a junior agent at a company called CAA. And I said, hey, Aaron, I want to intern for somebody. And she's like, oh, let me see what's going on. She's like, oh, and then she comes back. So I think I got somebody for you. I go and interview with this dude. His name's Ben Bond. And it's funny, he sees my resume and he's like, oh, you're overqualified. And I know Cynic, like, he was a Cynic fan from Focus. And I was like, he was one of these eclectic outsider musicians, wasn't even in the metal scene, but just knew the band from that record. And then next thing you know, I'm trying to make a living, you know, as a musician. And I'm, again, really, because I don't think I ever really made it before that, but I started working in network sitcoms, you know, and doing guitars and stuff. And he brought me in more and more when he started to realize I could play and the level of my playing and everything. He was just like, it was just like earning trust, really. And it turned into real work, and to where I had to drop out of school because I was like basically at the studio all the time and just making sounds and having fun with these guys. And it was many years of that. But I'm finding that, like, yeah, you're always just like, it's a combination of having a super eclectic taste, the practical aspects of needing to survive as a musician in the world. So there's always this like, what can I do? You know, I can teach now, I can do whatever it takes. And then, you know, this calling to express it in these unusual forms of records and sounds. And sometimes they all converge and you can actually pull it off and make a living off one of them, right? It's like somehow maybe one takes off or whatever versus, because I thought for a while that I was like, I'm cool with being a session musician. I love just playing my guitar and reading a chart and phoning in this guitar sound and like playing like that dude. And but then I was like, after a while, I was like, oh no, I'm not wired this way. I have weird tendencies and I need to make weird sounds and I have other things I need to do as a musician, and it's not built out for this kind of thing long-term. And there's so many other people out there doing it way better than me that I was just like, I'm totally cool with just going back to exploiting the things that my anomalous, you know, interests as a sound person, as a musician, you know? So, but yeah, there's guys that are ridiculous session cats that get in these rooms, they bust out styles left and right. They're effortlessly nailing every take. And they're just that kind of musician. And it's incredible.
I've always been really impressed by that because it's so far from what I'm able to do, or even so far from how I think, that whenever I've been around those types who can just read a situation and then do exactly what's needed for it, but like really any situation, is incredible.
It's incredible skill. Yeah. That's a lot of knowledge and time with the instrument and study, and such a unique skill. And
it's more than just knowledge, though. It's the ability to synthesize that knowledge in real time.
Oh, yeah. No, they're like, it's like you have to be an empathic being tuning into like the needs of a producer or whatever, you know, person you're working with in context, and just like channel it through. I mean, it's like, it is an art form in itself, you know. And there's those legendary guys, especially in LA and the East Coast, has them, these beasts that just played on so many records and so many soundtracks. And I mean, Vinny Caliuta as an example, as a drummer, I mean, that guy's, God, his catalog is like ridiculous. Yeah.
I think it's interesting to me that you don't define yourself that way yet. I call it proof. Whenever I'm feeling weird about stuff I'm doing or questioning it, I like to just look at the proof. And to me, the proof is literally just what happened. What has happened to lead up to this point? What has actually transpired? And I mean, the proof is that you actually did that stuff. So I find it interesting that you don't define yourself as that. However, you were able to thrive doing it. What is different to you about how you see those types of players versus you?
Because I never felt secure. I never had the secure.
Do they?
I don't know. They're better at faking it or something. I felt like a hack. I was just like, I can fake this sound, but I don't have it in my bones. What I have in my bones is weird cynic songs and stuff that I write and stuff in my own weird creativity. But that session, I mean, I could do some of it. I mean, it was funny. I did a soundtrack for a film with my friend Amy Correa, who's a longtime spirit sister of mine, and we've made a lot of music together. And we did this soundtrack for a film called The Tiger Hunter. And the producer, director of the film, she had a really clear vision of what she wanted for the music. And it was, she had all these songs that were from the 60s and 70s and late 70s that were all in the temp track. So it was like this song, this song, this song. So we basically like had to do sound alikes of all these songs, like just enough to where it was different, where you're not. But I swear, I thought we were going to be like in a legal battle after I.
Well, you're not plagiarizing, but
yeah, and I had done this for library music as well, and I did find that like if I apply myself, I can pretty easily rip shit off. I mean, it's not that hard, right? And this is why I'm always encouraging creative people to just, if you have two decisions to make, make the less orthodox one in a song, because it's too easy to rip off things and be so literal and quote stuff. Go the other way, make it more difficult for yourself. Do something new, rewrite, make something fresh, like try and do something that hasn't been done before. But I did find in doing that film with Amy, like we just were copying sounds left and right, down to where I like did a Stones song and I was totally copying Stones type guitars, a ZZ Top thing. And I was just like, holy shit, like I didn't know I could play like this. I don't have these chops, but I could fake it. You know what I mean? I could fake it enough to where it was like, it sounded pretty good in the context of this film and this little piece of music. So it's, again, you always feel a bit hacky. You're trying to quote these people who are bleeding their souls out as a sound, and you're just barely touching it and just being like, okay, I'm going to cop it, you know? But so it doesn't feel, I mean, I guess you're just trying to create something that, in, you know, that was us doing our job. And the reality is that it would have been just as easy to go and make something really strange, but we were asked to do this and we did it and it came out great. And it was a lot of fun, but it was reminding me that I could do sound alikes and sound like different guitar players, but you just have to apply yourself. I mean, you, I'm sure you're the same, any of us. It's like you spend enough time, you can pretty much do anything.
It is a matter of what you spend your time on.
Yeah. Like what you're focusing on.
It's a topic that I hear about a lot when I talk to either, you know, guitar players that wish they were better songwriters that wish they were better guitar players, just people who are really good at something, but wish they were better at this other thing. And then my question is, well, how much did you focus on that other thing? And they're like, not at all. It's like, well, what do you expect?
There you go. Hello. Yeah, no, that's it. It's like, where are you putting your energy? Where are you putting your energy? It's true. And any of us who have spent any bit of time developing skills on an instrument, you learn that it's like whatever you're focusing on, you'll accomplish, you know, especially if you have some basic foundational skills and facility. It's just applied interest and then doing the mechanical aspect of practicing and developing the technique, you know.
How much does a mechanical work take up your time and focus
for me
now? Yeah.
Well, nothing right now, because I barely played my guitar since I finished the record. I've just been like taking, I mean.
Okay, so I don't mean like right this second, but like in general, on average.
I mean, the Cynic record, making this new Cynic record, and that's really a good reference point. It was all consuming. I mean, it's like preparing for the Olympics. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're like, fucking A, I got to play like this? Holy shit. Okay. And it is like riding a bike once you kind of do it, the alternate picking. That's like, okay, I've been doing this since I was a teenager. Like, I can do this, but I want to do something new. I want to push the envelope. I want to make new sounds. I want to do riffs that I've never done before. I want to create new things. So this is the dilemma of every new record, right? You're just trying to kind of step out of your comfort zone and make something new. And that's where it's, you know, it can be a combination of complete, you know, exhilaration and torture, you know, because you're just like psyched that it's new, but at the same time to get there, it's like a hell of a journey into the realms of, I mean, I had an overlaying element here. This wasn't me with my band getting psyched, writing a record, all that camaraderie. I had my two bandmates go away and I was suddenly in a situation where I had, you know, thankfully I had this drummer, but he was dealing with his own stuff. And there were just a lot of layers we were working through. And so a lot of life was overlaid. And that's part of what I think was, for me, really took its toll, you know, in terms of taking everything out of me. But
like just a record on its own is hard enough.
Just a record on its own. I know. And but Cynic Records are like, you know, for us, it's always been like you're just trying to push. You're pushing through something, and you're also trying to say something. And you're, it's really not you, right? It's coming through you in a sense, but it really feels like you're just trying to get out of, you're getting into something new. So you're stepping into a new body, and it's, it can be uncomfortable, but then once you settle in, it's like, okay, I got this. This is a thing. And I hear what's going on here, but I often don't even understand what these records are until years later. You know, it's like until listening back, and I don't usually listen to stuff after it's finished, but I will on occasion things come up and you go and take a listen. It's like, what the fuck was that? What was I singing about? What the hell are those? It's just like, because it doesn't feel, you know, it feels so not personal, you know, it's not, has nothing to do with you. It's like this sound, right? It's So, but yeah, there is a lot of technical stuff in Cynic, and it is technically inclined and physically demanding music. And
yeah, you can't not focus on it to some degree.
Yeah, you can't.
And pull it off.
I dream of those kinds of projects, and partially doing the acoustic stuff is like that. It's almost a response to just try and play something really easy and simple. But even that becomes its own incredibly arduous, intense, amazing situation, you know? I mean, I was just like, I went and did this record for hospital patients. I was in Nashville, you know, just like a few months ago. And I was doing all these kind of ambient, acoustic, dreamy, very comfortable, soft. And it's really for people that are post surgical, who are just, and just for an app, and it's this whole thing. And I, you know, it's like, oh, this is going to be so chill. I'm just going to play this really mellow, beautiful acoustic stuff. I was like, oh, I made this last minute decision. I bring this one parlor acoustic guitar I have, and I put 13s on it. And the action's like up to here.
Gotta make it hard.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, I'm literally developing calluses, and my friend at the studio's putting fucking liquid whatever skin on my fingers because they're about to bleed. I haven't had developed calluses since I was like 18 or something, 16. I'm here, I'm like killing myself playing the slowest tempo, mellowest. It was like, it was, do you know what I'm saying? No, this is how absolutely. It works. And it was almost like I had to earn this stuff. I wasn't going to make it easy. I had to really get it out and just make this very difficult guitar, you know, this guitar that's very difficult to play sound good. It was like a form of torture, you know, but it's also like, it's not torture. It's trying to keep it interesting and exciting. I need some edges. I need some discomfort. I need to go into the crevices. Otherwise it just starts to sound sleepy and the music loses its interest, right?
What do you think of the statement that doing anything well is difficult? Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I get that. I mean, it depends on how you define difficult, because if you perceive it as just part of the process, then, but yeah, I think anytime you want to do something that involves a high level of detail and attention. Even if it's simple, and it's, again, but I like the whole conversation we're having, we're polarizing the experience, right? So we're saying, but maybe that's just what it is. It's like, this is just like, I always think of an animal that's been hurt, like a dog that's been hit by a car or some injuries happen. They don't really sit there and think this is difficult. They just deal with it as best they can, and they don't build a story around it.
Yeah. They give no fucks.
Yeah.
I thought about that actually. I had an incident where this was very much in my face. I was living in an apartment a few years ago and took my dog to the dog park. She's not aggressive. I mean, she's a German Shepherd, so she can fuck you up, but she's not aggressive. And somebody else who lived there had their dog and was throwing a frisbee or whatever. And my dog will, you know, just like a machine when it comes to that kind of stuff. And he threw it, and my dog jumped in the air at the same exact time that this other dog jumped in the air. I guess her mouth landed on this dog's ear and literally bit it off, just like that. Just bit it clean the fuck off. And the dog yelped and was over it. Owner wasn't over it. The owner was freaking out, but the dog was ready to keep on playing. It was bleeding everywhere, but ready to keep on playing. And I was thinking, like, they just move the fuck on. It's amazing.
They move on. I know. And I, you know, and that's what I'm saying, like, with this conversation. It's like, again, like, we love to tell stories about our experiences and kind of measure them as being good or bad. And it's like, how about they just are?
They just are.
They just are. Everything just is. I mean, really, that's the true nature of reality. We ascribe these stories and meaning and polarize things to give it something. And it's like, it just is. It just isness unfolding. There is no good or bad. There is no right or wrong. It's just happening. And I mean, that's really the true nature of reality. It's not about opposites and polarizing. And I mean, not to say, I mean, we all are seeking some form of joy or some sense of peace or connection to life. And usually you have to measure it by something to know what that is. But I don't know. There's just, you know, this is going into that realm, but there is that where it just kind of isness. And it's not difficult, say. Let's just say, what, instead of rather difficult, it takes a lot of energy.
Fair enough.
I like, right? It takes a lot of energy to do something well.
Sure. That is also how you're framing it, right?
Oh, I'm just playing with this right now. I'm lobbing shit out there, bro. I'm because I do this all day long. This is how I'm trying to navigate the situation we're in. You gotta play with this a little bit. Otherwise, you know, you just, what are you going to do? I mean, what are we going to do here? What are we doing here?
The thing about it just being what it is, I thought about this when actually Sean played on that guitar album with me and Emil.
Oh, yeah.
The drums that he sent were so incredible. And I think he recorded them in like 6 hours. They're fucking unbelievable. And I remember being really stoked, obviously. But then I was thinking, why am I stoked? Like, isn't that what should just happen? Like, isn't that just a part of this, right? Like, if someone's going to do something well that is quote unquote difficult, should I really be impressed by this? Should just this be what I assumed is going to happen because it's what's supposed to happen and I should be totally even about it? And that experience, actually, I still think about it because kind of back to what you're saying about is it difficult? Is it just something that takes a lot of effort? I think the answer is yes to both, but I do think that the way that we look at stuff, the way that we frame this stuff is very, very strange sometimes, because I do feel like doing anything well should just be what you're naturally drawn to do. It's hard to explain.
Yeah. And, you know, and at the same time, like, I'm catching, you know, I'm hearing you right now and I'm like, you know what? It is hard. It's hard being a musician. It's hard to do this. It's hard to wake up every morning and to keep doing this. And there is no choice in the matter, or there is. I'm not going to be never a victim, but it is fucking hard. This is hard, man. Trying to do this, what we're doing. I mean, are you kidding me? This is fucking A, man. It's a lot. And all the things that go into it, and you're trying to set precedents for how things are, the standards in which you want things met and all that. And it's not meant to be easy, I guess. That's the point, is that it's just not meant to be. It's just part of the gig, and you show up for it and you give it everything you got, and you just, again, like, it's, but yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy, you know?
The effort involved in doing it, I guess, to the ideal that you decided on, right? Because, like, I feel like we can only define our own ideals, or maybe if we're working with a producer, maybe they can help us see something that wasn't there, but still, like, it's on us to get there. Is that something, as well as the fact that you didn't feel like you had a choice in the matter, like, this is just your path, that standard?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if it came from childhood trauma or something. maybe something I saw in my parents, or I don't know what. I mean, who knows?
But has it always been there?
Totally. It's always been like that. I was like that as a child, and just high attention to detail and caught up in things in a different way. And if focusing on unusual things. And you know, it's funny, like, because we can go in circles talking about all of this. It's like in terms of like, you know, this journey of doing this work. And I really now...
It's because there is no one answer.
Yeah, there's no one answer. And I think it's like I've reached this point now, too, where I feel like if it's a benefit, if it's benefiting others, you've done your job. Like, it really has nothing to do with you in the end. Like, you're just doing, you're in service to make something, you know, offer something. And then if it actually is a benefit, then you did your job. Like, you know, like, and try not overthink it, really, and just trust that it just took that to get there. And, but yeah, I mean, this is, I'll tell you, like, for me, this record was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. This was the most difficult thing I've ever done. And I've been in some really difficult situations, man. This was the one that just like took me to my edges and broke me down in ways that I didn't even imagine I was capable of, like, you know what I mean? Just like questioning everything and ripped apart.
Why did you finish it?
I finished it for my fallen brothers. I really did it for them. I saw my two lifelong mates go through some very difficult years. You wouldn't imagine that it would end in the way that it did, especially in the sudden ways that that their lives ended. But then, you know, in the back of your mind, there's some thinking that this isn't going well. Even my own friend, you know, Malone, he was doing so well. He was really getting better. And then he just checked out. So yeah. And so we were all, and I say Reinert because Reinert was a part of this record, you know, he was connected to some of the early demos back in 2015. Like he knew some of this music. Like we had that split actually in September, but long before that, right after we finished Carmen Bent, which was in 2014, we had lots of plans and it was a high momentum period for me. I was ready to pump out some records, man. I was in this like, fuck yeah, this is a flow state. And things happened, life happened, and things got derailed. But I will say there's nothing that can prepare you for things like this, you know, and it's, you just have to walk through that fire. But I finished it for them. I finished it for myself and I finished it for the audience. You know, I felt like I had an obligation on multiple levels because this has been an ongoing situation for so many years. These guys were obviously a part of this whole thing. And I needed for my own self to push through my discomfort and my want to, my need, my desire to self-sabotage and destroy everything around me. Because I really have, I had that tendency just want to just shut everything down.
Which would be completely understandable too.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, I remember it was like months where I was just like, I'm so now finally have permission to live truly nihilistically.
The universe granted you the...
Just granted me the permit. I just got the card, man. If you got the card, this is the one. But it was like, that's not really what you want to do here. I'm not sure if that works either. You know, it's all just like... I mean, I'm grateful I have a long-term meditation practice, man, and I've been sitting looking at my crazy mind for a long time because it's given me the insight to see the ways in which my mind really can be very troubling and create a lot of problems. And I had to kind of stop all that and just push through like all of this like fear and discomfort and everything that makes me not want to do things. I had to push through it with all my might, all my will, you know. It really was like, it took me, it unraveled me to where I felt like, you know, I mean, it's like, and you could never compare it to Viktor Frankl, but it was that kind of cathartic sensation of just being ripped apart, you know. I don't know if you know Viktor Frankl and Man's Search for Meaning. So it's like, it's that kind of like, where you just feel like you've gotten to the core of, you know, seeing things as they are. And now what are you going to do? What are you going to do with yourself? And, you know, you want to celebrate, right? At this point, it's like, celebrate this. You come out of these things, hopefully feeling inspired.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I do want to give, I want to be more in service. Like I'm finding that especially like as I, you know, the passage of time, it's like, I just want to help people along because I know how hard it is out there. I know how hard it is, and for most people and in this realm, it's not an easy place.
Nope.
Go back to here we are, back to the polarization. But do you know what I mean? That is where most of us live, right? I mean, it's just not. And I'm trying to meet everyone where they are, including myself. And it's okay to admit that to myself. You know, I'm not the Buddha. I'm not some enlightened being that can see things and just snap my perceptions. And I'm fucking just like the rest of, you know, I'm just like everybody else in it. I'm in the mud. So yeah, to offer something, you know, like maybe you're doing with these podcasts, you're offering insights and ways of looking. Because I listened to a handful of yours and I thought, yeah, this is actually really thoughtful stuff. Like you're not just geeking out about gear or something. You're kind of getting into a whole metaverse, which is cool.
Well, I'm glad you checked it out. And I'm glad you think so. Honestly, that would bore the shit out of me.
Yeah, it wouldn't make sense for you to do that. That's not who you are.
The other podcast, the URM podcast that I do that, you know, focuses on production, a lot of the early episodes were more about that kind of stuff. And I got to a point where I was just thinking, either I'm going to quit doing this or I need to throw any rules about this out the window and just try to have conversations with people who I would probably be having conversations with anyways and record them and fuck gear. I mean, if it comes up, it comes up, but it doesn't have to come up. And also my philosophy as a musician or a producer is that gear's cool, but it's not that cool. Like it matters, but it doesn't matter that much. And you're certainly not going to learn about it properly in a podcast. The only real way to learn about it is to go use it. So I feel like it would be a waste of this medium to talk about that stuff too much.
Yeah. I mean, I get excited about gear. Like
we all do.
We all do. Yeah. But you're right. It's, you can only go so far and you have to get in there with it. Really. It's like, otherwise you're just dancing around the hype. It's like a sales thing or something, you know, it's like getting excited about something that and so many people can dismantle gear and reinterpret the way it's used based on their own sensibilities as a musician. And I remember even back in the 90s, like, it was Trent Reznor was taking cheap gear like Zoom. Remember Zoom and shit? And like running it through stuff. And he was doing these really, and it was like he was redefining what you could do with shitty gear, you know? I mean, it's funny to say that because he's such a highbrow audio guy now, right? But he was that guy saying, I was just taking this crappy Zoom pedal and running it, my vocal through it, and this and that, and
plugging the guitar straight into the board.
Yeah,
turning the gain all the way up.
Exactly. Yeah, just doing things that were like, but you know, and I guess that stuff's been going on long before, right? Eno was doing shit like that, and fucking a lot of people. I mean, the stories go back. But yeah, it makes you realize like how the art always transcends the gear, even, right? It's like
it does. So we've got the online schools, which actually do have all the video content. And I've always thought, like, if we're going to show somebody how to do something involving audio or music, it makes a lot more sense for them to actually be able to see and hear what it is that they're trying to learn. Also, I think that how much does it help somebody to hear words about the way something's supposed to sound?
Right. I know.
I feel like when people start talking about gear or like things like that, it starts to make me think of the bullshit that I see online, like in forums or marketing hype, where people are using these words to describe this stuff that there are no words to describe. And so people get led in really strange directions and waste a bunch of money or waste a bunch of time. And
I know.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, it's true. We're just like dancing around in the realm of words, pointing to things. And it can be really, I feel for younger people, especially right now with like, I mean, it's just so overwhelming. It's like you have this television in your phone that's just running advertisements now designed based on your choices for the past, whatever, like custom algorithm advertising. So it just, it's so manipulated. It's so like skewed, and just the way it's all packaged, it just feels like, and it makes me think like going further, it's like, you know, they always say in spiritual teaching, they'll say you can only point. You can't really use words to talk about the experience of isness. You can just point to it. And all these words just point. They're just pointing. They're just giving you a reference point. You can't use words. And it's funny. You can say the same with gear. You can say the same with anything. It's like, we're just trying to point to something that is just an experience that's just has no words. You know, it's just kind of happening.
Well, you're right. It's not just gear, but you just made me think of what I think a lot of great producers do, for instance, when trying to get an idea across. You know, you're working with somebody on their songs, which, like you were saying earlier, they don't exist physically. They're just this thing that it's real, but the way that it's real is very, it's really hard to define once you actually try. And so you get someone whose job it is to help somebody else make a song better. The way that most really awesome producers I know show people their ideas is to actually do them so that they can play them and let other people hear them and then decide, rather than sit there and talk about.
So mirror the idea back. That's a technique in psychology as well, right?
Well, actually let them hear it.
Yeah, let them hear it objectively.
Because then they can decide, yeah.
That's interesting. So is that something you were doing? Like you just like learn the song or a riff or something and be like,
yeah,
oh, that's really cool.
Or let them go home that night and do it on your own time. Play it for them the next day. I mean, they could reject it, but it actually letting them hear what it is, like actually experience it, is totally different than trying to describe it.
I know.
Because who the hell knows what they're going to interpret? I feel like actually using what it actually is, it's much truer and it's much more powerful.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Just out of curiosity, when you have worked with producers or guitar teachers or music teachers or, you know, anybody else whose role was to help something you were doing along, I guess what communication style worked best for you to actually help you get better?
Well, one of my faults is that I had the tendency to, I'll just do like a million takes of the same thing. And they like all are pretty much exactly the same. But I don't think they are. And I'll just keep going and just track it one more time to get that one little part. That helps if I'm in a room with somebody, an engineer or a friend, just like, okay, what are you doing? And, you know, this is that we can go into these wormholes as musicians, because I've seen it with other, you lose objectivity and you're caught up in something that's never going to happen. Because I'll do that. And then I'll go back and listen to 30 takes and I'll be like, holy shit, I can't even, I'll end up comping it in like 30 seconds because they're all the same. And it's, but I would, do you know what I mean?
100%.
And it's like a form of like, I don't know if that's a form of mental illness or what's going on there, but it's a like, cause that is a skill where just like, I nailed it, you know. And I, you know, an example of that kind of musician is Reiner as a drummer. Malone and I were the opposite. We cut thousands of takes, just trying to capture it. Reiner would be like one take, maybe two. He's like, I'm done. And I think part of it is that he was always really impatient. He has had no patience. So he was just, and he was so ridiculously, had such an incredible command that he could just do it. And he knew it was enough. He knew it was right. And he would just be like, that's it. I'm done. And meanwhile, the rest of us are just like laboring over trying to fucking get this thing like exact. And it's, I mean, like, you know, Sean Malone, I mean, he cut bass like, I mean, I wish I could find, I don't know if I have those emails or screenshots or something where he would just show me all the takes. And it was like 1,000 takes. You know what I mean? Like, just like.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just like, whoa, what's going on? Are you okay, bro? You know, you okay, man? Like, what are you going for here? Because I mean, this is next level. Whatever you're hearing, none of us are hearing. And I support you completely, but stay with us.
I think that that's actually a really common trait among very high achieving musicians. And I think that the Reinhardt way of doing it, from what I've seen, is more rare. Like more rare to where they
can super just, rare.
Yeah, they just channel it. No, it's good. Move on with life. That's
fucking next.
Yeah,
he's like already thinking about dinner and shit. I mean, that was shocking. It was like,
yeah, I have almost never encountered that. Honestly, like I've encountered what you're talking about way, way more. I feel like when I've recorded people who are like that or been like that myself, it's really, really important to help the person just break out of that mental state, because usually if they just take a break for 15 minutes or come back the next day, they'll be cool with the first thing that they did.
Go for a walk. Fucking, I know, it's true. Get some perspective.
Yeah, your brain is your best asset and also, you know, worst enemy, I think, when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, I know. No, I you're reminding me of times of like in the throes of a song that you're trying to finish, or a record at the end of a record, and your ears are so fried and you've been so taken to your edges with all the recording and everything that it took out of you to make the record. And then you'll have a moment where you listen, you're just like, oh my God, this is horrible. This is the worst thing ever.
I fucked up.
I made a fucking piece of shit. What have I been doing? And then you realize it's your mind. And I always like, your mind can be such a traitor and it can really betray you and your ears. I've gotten better about that. I know, like, okay, I am not useful after these hours of the day. I'm not useful with this kind of type of practice. I'm not useful. Like, it's like knowing your windows of where you can actually work, be productive and work smart versus like dragging yourself through the mud just because you're fucking exhausted and you're never going to get anything done.
I think good collaboration, whether it's good bandmates or a good producer or a good engineer or whatever it is, I think part of that is knowing when to tell somebody else to just pull the throttle back and chill the fuck out.
Yeah. You need your mirrors, your friends to be like, dude,
please
stop.
Yeah. I don't want to take up your entire afternoon. We have a few questions from the audience. Is it cool if I ask you a couple?
Yeah.
All right. So Christian Slater says, hello, Paul. Thank you so much for coming on the Riffard podcast. Do you find that there's a connection between meditation and incorporating the practice into music within your experience? Elements such as sustained concentration, creativity, maintaining a relaxed mind and body connection arise as possibilities which the practice could offer. Thank you for all of the stellar music throughout the years. I'm looking forward to Ascension Codes.
Awesome. Hi, Christian. Yes, I completely think there's a direct correlation. For me, it started with a book I read called The Natural Classical Guitarist. I think that's what it was called. And it was this book back in the day that taught you how to pay attention to your posture and your breathing when you're playing your guitar. And it was the first time that I was really drawing attention to that, like to tune into my body as an organism and how it's relating to the instrument in real time. Like, am I tensing up? How's my foot? How's my breathing? Are my shoulders relaxed? And just getting into the zen of fucking just being the instrument and not, because I would catch myself getting into these trying to execute something. And I'm like tense. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so tense right now, trying to play this riff or pull this. And this is not the sound I'm going for, but my body was just, and like angrily, it's a form of like self-abuse in a way, but it's, again, these are habitual patterns from a lifetime or lifetimes. So I started to really practice that, learning how to play relaxed, to be at ease with the instrument, to be aware of my breath when I'm playing. How are my hands? How's my shoulders? How are my arms? Am I tensing? And I still, this is an ongoing thing. You never arrive. But yeah, I mean, Cynic's music is directly, especially of it. I think everything I do, but you know, I mean, in terms of a more intense, heavy art form, really connected to that. I mean, that's really why, you know, for us at the beginning of this trajectory with focus, you know, beyond the scope of all the influences, really expanding for us during a really short amount of time, going deep into world music and jazz and bringing all that in. I was also actively meditating like a maniac, obsessed with all this shit. I mean, like, I still am, obviously, but it was like peaking early period of it. So it was directly informing things for me, mm-hmm. lyrically, sound, vibe, you know? So yeah, I mean, everything, your whole life is a mirror for the work and the sound that you do. So absolutely, there's meditation is, because I find that really good, a steady meditation practice for me, it clears, it makes space. Like you come up with solutions to things that you normally, you in a way that you would have never imagined. You think outside the box, and it's giving your mind a moment to rest and to just cool down. And it's just, at first you have to get to know it, right? You have to kind of learn how to settle. But once you can get into a settled space, it actually like works out all these kinks. It's like almost comparable to like fasting, you know, fasting, they say you give your digestive system a rest. And what happens is your body goes and fixes all these little ailments. So it'll fix shit that's wrong with you that you didn't even know what was wrong. But internal stuff, fucking a little ache down here, this thing, it just suddenly can put all that energy towards fixing stuff because it's been constantly digesting. It's just that takes so much energy for this body. So it's meditations like that too. It kind of gives your mind a moment to work out all this subtle stuff that you're not... Bigger ideas for me, bigger conceptual ideas, musical stuff, art, you know, ideas for album covers, you know, all those things kind of, I feel like, come through meditation practice because you get to see you're not intellectualizing, you know, you're just in a state of kind of allowing it to come through. Yeah. I don't know if I answered the question, but.
I think you did answer the question, but I just wanted to add that on a very practical level, figuring out how to get rid of the tension when you're trying to play this kind of music is key because, I mean, A, it's going to prevent you from hurting yourself.
Yeah.
And B, like, it's going to facilitate you actually being able to do things that are technically super challenging and take a ton of endurance.
Totally. I mean, there are some things that do require a little more aggression or push, or you have to get that riff out. Like, I mean, to get a certain sound, even a palm mute, a certain thing, that's going to take a little bit more of a fucking weight. And that's a different kind of player, right? That's just kind of getting a sound out. But I always thought about this with drummers. I feel for drummers, especially in prog and progressive metal and stuff, because it's like a game of the youth. That thing wrecks your body, man.
Oh yeah.
Playing like that, you know, you got your peak window of 20s to 30s, and then it's kind of downhill from there. I mean, because the body can't, I mean, it's just so much. It's like you're like an athlete, you know, to play this style of music. And guitars, we it's a workout, but it's not at that level. You know what I mean? They're fucking running marathons every time they play a set, you know?
Yeah. It's pretty insane.
It's brutal on the body. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've known quite a few virtuosic metal drummers that quit, not because they hated music or anything like that, but just because literally they couldn't keep up with, and they didn't want to keep up with that level of physical commitment. Like, it's wrecking them. Of course it's wrecking them.
I mean, and there are some of these really light players that are like really fast, right? And they're doing the triggers and shit, and they're just like,
yeah,
they're tappers. Like little tappers that are just like mosquitoes on the kit, just fucking flying and barely. And it's kind of like, maybe they don't suffer the same abuse as, like, you know, is that like the Watts version? You know, it's like I always think about that, how he was, you know, Charlie, you know, from the Rolling Stones, how he just played so gently and was so chill. And, like, you know, that's why he was able to play those sets until he was, in his 70s or whatever. It's like not a lot of drummers can play, keep doing that and touring like that until that age. But he managed, and it was the art form. It was the way he played and the kind of music he was playing. But progress, I mean, look at, you know, Neil died pretty young, right? Mm-hmm. Neil Peart was, I mean, and he was praying hard, and he was obviously, it was a lot of complicated playing. And he was always like very physically inclined too, because I heard he would, like, there was tours where he would literally ride his bike from city to city.
Holy shit.
He was so like intense, that dude. Yeah, like he was into bicycle riding, and he would literally like not be on the bus. He'd get on his fucking bike and ride to the next gig. Can you imagine?
When I hear stories like that, I'm like, of course.
I know.
Of course someone who had that kind of output was a maniac.
Of course, I know. Yeah, it just goes hand in hand, right? They're just cruising, fucking cruising, man.
All right, last question. This is, and I'm sure you've gotten this a million times, but Landon James is wondering, I really want to know the effects chain for the robot vocals and how you pull it off live.
Well, it's changed with every record. And
it sounds very different now.
Yeah, it's totally different. I used actually a lot of real vocoder with keyboard, and then I would double my voice on it as well. So there's some old school vocoder stuff on there. And then I used this one plugin, Vocal Synth, I think, and just made some patches and played around with stuff. And I think I used this one, you know, because one of my standard techniques is the vocal in the center, octave above and below. So it's just three voices, like, mm-hmm. It's not about like harmonized vocoder. It's just octaves, you know, and it just creates this kind of sound. But each of them are EQ'd differently and have a different kind of quality to them. So it creates one sound. And every record is always, that's always been approached differently depending on the guitar environment, you know, all the other elements that are the songs, you know, because sometimes, but this record was a return to vocoder. And, you know, obviously, like, and it felt like totally natural. And even the demos from way back had heavy vocoder. Like I knew it in 2015 that I was on a bunch of these songs, that it was like I was going back to vocoder vibes. But yeah, I've used the TC Helicon hybrid. I made a pedal for that live. I used to, obviously we had, you know, Focus Days. It was a keyboardist, you know, growling and then running my vocals. You know, that's how I was doing that. I was just literally could have been saying one note into the mic and it was being played. Yeah, every record's different. It depends. And even live, that's the thing, the animal of doing something like this live. It's, I don't even know what I would do. It's like, I think I would just be in search of gear. I might have to ask you, like, what's the best gear for this? Because at that point you're reinterpreting, because, you know, to find the sound that's going to work the most stable in a live context. But I don't know. We'll see.
So it's always evolving.
It's always moving. It's a living organism. Yeah. There's no, I wish I could say I just use that one thing, but you know, the real trick, and I found, is that even if you get someone else to get that same patch and use my same patch and have the vocal up, octave down and above and below, just the timbre of their voice, it's going to sound totally different.
Yep. Absolutely.
Cause you're dealing with a human voice. So it's like, people are always wondering, like, what is that sound? It's like, you got to find it for your own voice.
Well, it's you.
Exactly. Especially because I'm bringing me into it. I'm not just like pure vocoder. It's not just a synth. It's not a synthesized. It's actually like there's a lot of human tone in there. And it's just part of this. And that's the thing. I think you have to find what works for your voice, a whole little world, and then just like use that. You know, it's very personal, I think, with vocoders.
Even with guitar rigs, you can give two different guitar players the same exact, just hand them the guitar.
Yeah.
It's going to sound completely different.
I mean, I'm sure you did. I had those friends that got like Eddie Van Halen's and Steve Vai's rig to the team. You know what I mean? They're learning their solos. It still didn't sound like them. You know, it's like you don't have their fingers. You don't have, you know, there's the biology. Yeah. I mean, there's even the energetic component that people underestimate with music. It's like covers for days. Yeah, it's great. And there's been some incredible Beatles groups and all these cool metal cover bands and stuff. But the imprint, the vibration of this human body on the instrument that's creating that sound, is it's unique to itself. And that's what's so beautiful think it's an Oscar Wilde quote, is, you know, it's worthwhile to be yourself because there's not another one like you, or something like that. It's like, it's worth trying to be an original because there's no one else like you. And it's, I think it's very true in music as well, that just always find your strengths in the most unorthodox and least obvious places and make the most out of them. You know, like, it's not meant to be about the shortcuts, right? It's about kind of, we're going full circle now, but going into those crevices where you're might be a little uncomfortable, but the treasures you find are really what's makes it all worthwhile.
100%. And with that, I think this is a good place to end the episode. I want to thank you for taking the time to hang out. It's been a pleasure catching up with you.
Yeah, great to chat with you, Eyal. It's been a long time. We'll have to stay in touch. Maybe I'll come to Atlanta sometime.
You should.